It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Jesus Christ, the
praise him. Have you guys seen Righteous Gemstones?
Praise, no, not yet.
Salvation of the West. I had to plug in my headphones, so there's probably going to be some weird reverb there for a second for people. But we love us some Jesus, and yeah, the Righteous Gemstones. I watched the first season. I know that more has happened. I thought the first season was good. I like, obviously, I'm a huge fan of a number of members of the cast, including the guy from Workaholics. And the guy from The Big Lebowski. Both of whose names
of
I have completely forgotten, even though
John Goodman
I legitimately
and Adam
love
Devine,
love their
Devine?
Yeah, Evan Devine or Devine or whatever, and John shit.
Goodman.
John
Goodman.
Shit.
Jesus Christ.
I saw a man that looked so much like...
I've been watching
like,
John Goodman my whole childhood. How did I do that?
Yeah, I saw someone who looked so much like John Goodman yesterday, and I walked up to him, and I was going to say, I'm just grateful for your work, and I walked up and stopped because it was not John Goodman, and I thought, this man must get this all the time. Like...
Yeah.
He knew.
Oh, God.
He must have. I mean, you know, the fun thing about that is if real John Goodman, if I had a chance to walk up to him, I would just walk up to him and I would extend my hand and I would ask him if he had any cocaine. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that movie with Denzel where he plays Denzel's drug dealer and Denzel's like Sully the pilot, but a drug addict? And it's there's... I don't know what the movie's name was, but there's a pretty cool scene where John Goodman walks into a room with a sack full of drugs to Sympathy for the Devil, and it kind of rules.
Ooh, that's sick.
The movie itself, pretty forgettable, but John Goodman as a coke dealer was kind of ruled.
Find it on YouTube. Let's watch it. Buddy, find it on YouTube.
I just rewatched...
Find this movie a movie on
No,
YouTube?
Just that scene.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Cody.
All right, okay.
I did rewatch The Big Lebowski recently.
Oh, yeah? Hold it up.
Still an absolutely perfect film in every way.
Yeah, it is
no
wonderful.
Notes. We'll never have notes. John Goodman, it's an astonishing crime that John Goodman didn't receive an Oscar for his
performance. Has he received any Oscars? Because he is unbelievably talented.
He's so good. He's good in everything he does. Did you guys ever watch that show Alpha House where he's like a Republican senator with a bunch of other Republican senators living in like a rental house in D.C.?
I heard it was good, though.
He's quite good in it. Yeah, it's very funny. It was a lot funnier before 2016, but he was very good in it. Yeah.
Yeah. 2016 was a real killer for anything in that arena.
Yeah.
Robert, Mm-hmm. We're talking about entertainment, and I
took your advice, Katie, which led to me exposing a series of penises.
Okay. This is not my fault.
All right.
This is not my fault.
It's kind of your fault. It's a little bit your fault.
Robert,
Katie.
This is your fault because I've been saying this for motherfucking years.
I know.
It was your choice to watch it and then pause it on that scene when
Sophie and her mother were over. Let me explain to you
what happened.
I was watching Patriot as you've been harassing me to do for weeks. And of course, from the first episode, I was hooked. It's very good.
It's incredible.
It's very, very good. So I watched through like season. I literally stay up the first night I start watching it. I stay up until like 8 a.m. watching all of season one. I'm kind of like fucked. I got pretty drunk too. And so the next day I was kind of hungover, get a late start, have to pull a bunch of stumps out. So I only make it through like an episode and a half that night before I'm like, I'm just going to pass out. So I do the thing that I normally do when I'm alone in my house, but I want to go to sleep, where I leave the TV on as I like get up to brush my teeth and get out my do all the stuff so that I have some comforting sounds going on in the next room.
Yeah.
But I'm not watching it. And so like when I'm done and ready for bed, I just walk in and I close the laptop that's attached to my TV. Don't think about what's on the screen. I'll restart the episode when I come to watch again. So the next day, Sophie and her mom come in from out of town. We're hanging out, show them the farm. Everything's good. Everything's nice. And then we sit down. And as we're sitting down, you know, we're going to eat some Thai food together, hang out with, you know, all my friends and chat. I decide, what do we do when we have our friends over and we want to talk? Obviously, we turn the sound off on our TV and we put on the movie Roar, which is a film from the 1970s Tippi Hedren and her family get repeatedly mauled by actual lions. None of it's fake. They're horribly injured.
Her leg is broken by an elephant. A quick sidebar because this
we'll talk Roar about is, it. Let me finish the yes, Patriot story okay, and we'll okay, talk about finish. Roar. So I turn on my laptop and the TV to put on Roar. And of course, when you are like me and you're lazy about everything media, if you just like put your laptop into sleep while it's playing something, when it comes out of sleep, it's going to immediately start playing whatever you had on. Now, in the show Patriot, this won't be revealing much. A big chunk of it takes place at this like piping company in the Midwest. And they're regularly taking trips over to Europe. And so they'll have these scenes right before they go to the airport where all of the main cast are like lined up at a series of urinals talking. And it's just like a thing that they do. It's kind of a fun bit. A lot of stuff like, you know, important plot points happen when they're chatting at the urinals. And in season two, they decide to do this scene from the perspective of everybody's dick. So you actually like see the penises of everybody in the scene. I was unaware this had started happening because, again, I had been away from the TV when this part had been playing and I hadn't looked at the screen. My contacts were out. So it comes back on. And as I'm explaining what the movie Roar is to Sophie and her mom, they immediately see on May 80th, inch screen just a bunch of strangers hogs. So that's thank you for that, Katie.
And then Robert's texting, they were our text thread this week about what we're going to talk about today, just laying into me about how I traumatized Sophie's mother when I bear no responsibility for this. Although that's so funny because then my first thought was like, oh gosh, what dicks were they? Were they corporate dicks? Were they Brazilian jiu-jitsu dicks? Were they French detective dicks?
It was the corporate dicks, right? Yeah, it was like, I'm not going to make comments about circumcision, yay or nay, but there's a lot of interesting circumcision-related things that you get to see in that.
This is amazing. I apologize to Sophie's mother and Sophie's mother alone, but Robert, again, I reiterate, years I've been telling you. Years.
Years you've been telling me to watch Patriot?
You could have avoided all of
this. Yes, I've been for just about the entire time I've been laying it on thick recently because I have shown I've gifted this show to so many people. They've all been touched by it. And there have been several times over the course of our time here in the worst year ever, where I've wanted to talk about things like jellyfish. There are things that are in the show and stuff that happens that the difficulties of arriving, getting from point A to point B, different things that are themes in the show.
Yeah, the mechanics of fluid dynamics. It's a very good show. People should watch it. It's definitely, when you start watching it or when you read the descriptions, it seems like it's going to be like 24. Like it's a show about an American secret agent who's got to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. It's not what you would expect from that description. So it's a good show. You should watch it. It's like a deconstruction of shows like 24 of all that kind of like stuff. I thought it was very enjoyable. I really like the male lead.
He's amazing.
Everybody is, it's filled with actors who are like initially kind of off-putting and then surprisingly charming very quickly. Which is
just about every character. Like the casting is so impeccable for every character.
Yeah, it's great.
Ichabod, the guy from
Ichabod. Yeah.
That 70s show.
Yeah, like, the guy from that 70s show. He apparently has a podcast that's set in the world of the show with the creator of the show, where he's just talking about his career in piping and his cocaine addiction.
Him doing those piping monologues. I'm sorry, everybody,
so
if you want to appreciate
every time you have to watch it, I die laughing.
The one people I showed it to my parents over Christmas. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. They're the gamble. My mom had tears from laughing at that. Anyway, we've talked about this show.
It's good.
I'm thrilled you enjoyed it.
You know what else is good? The classic comedy Roar by Tippi Hedren and her husband, some guy, and also her entire family because nobody else would act in that movie.
Okay, so yeah, we have to actually clarify what Roar is because
it's amazing.
What you said is true, but Tippi Hedren was obsessed with tigers, lions. Wait a minute.
Yeah, they were in Africa and they like saw tigers and lions doing something. There's some story about this that they were like inspired that they wanted to save them and help people.
But they brought them into their home.
Well, an important part of the story, Katie, is that Tippi Hedren was traumatized by Alfred Hitchcock to a terrifying extent
because
he was a monster. And you can tell the degree of trauma that he inflicted on her by the fact that basically the next thing she decided to do was buy a large plot of land in Southern California with her husband and start adopting abandoned full-grown lions and tigers, eventually 230 of them.
Unbelievable.
And they lived in a house.
They're protecting her from the birds.
It had been years. Like, songbirds, I guarantee you, did not come close to
this
place.
There was nothing there.
They also adopted, like, elephants and shit. They almost went bankrupt. They had to, like, sell everything else they owned because eventually feeding all these animals was $4,000 a week in 70s money.
I can't even imagine the medical bills for being
bald. They were attempting to make a movie the whole time. So her and her husband and her kids, who were all actors and actresses because Hollywood, were all living on this house they built on this wildlife sanctuary where dozens of fully grown lions and tigers and pumas and shit had physical access to them at all times. And they spent 5 years shooting a movie. Now, it is a movie. You can watch it. But the plot makes no sense. And it's really not a movie because they had a script and they had a plot. And what the movie that you've seen is that two characters will meet in the house where there's dozens of lions and tigers and will attempt to start a dialogue to move the plot forward. And 30 to 45 seconds into this dialogue, one of them will be attacked by one or multiple big cats. And then the scene becomes about everyone dealing with the fact that one of them is being horribly mauled. You see, the male lead gets his scalp ripped off. Tippi Hedren gets her leg shattered by an elephant. More than 100 people are serious. Yeah, she gets thrown by an elephant and breaks her leg. There's a couple of scenes where her husband has cats biting through his hand and he's bleeding everywhere. Like this is not, none of this is like hidden. Like you are just watching people get very badly mauled by large cats. And the fun thing is these are as domesticated as big cats can be. One of them was Anton LaVey's pet tiger or lion.
They are beautiful.
They're beautiful animals. They're not like trying to kill them. They look exactly like your house cat does, but they weigh like 600 pounds. And there's, again, dozens of them. There are some scenes where like Tippi Hedren's husband is being piled on by like 20 cats at a time. It's fucking amazing. So it took them 5 years, 100+ injuries and multiple hospitalizations. Her husband nearly lost his hand, like, or his whole arm from gangrene. 5 years just to film it and 6 years to edit it, because what they actually had was just fucking nonsense. And the resulting movie is, again, the way I like to watch it with my friends is I'll just turn the sound off and put it on the TV while we're, like, talking and drinking in the background. Because there'll be, like, 10 minutes of, like, boring dialogue. And then, like, people will start getting attacked in a boat by lions. And then you're like, yeah, let's watch this. That's fucking cool. That son of a bitch is bleeding all over the place.
Robert.
Yes,
Robert
Katie?
Evans.
Yes.
You come here. You try to tell me that I'm to blame for scaring Sophie's mom with the penises, mm-hmm. when what your plan was to show her tigers mauling children in Tippi Hendren's house. I'm sorry.
They're
this
all
will
adults.
Not stand.
They're all adults. They're all adults. They knew, you don't have to feel bad about it because everybody knew what they were getting into. Nobody made that entire family live with dozens of big cats in a house.
Sure, but what's well, more traumatic Tippi to Sophie's did. Mom? Some penises or that. Well, I don't know.
I think everyone enjoys watching people get mauled by large cats. That's just a good time.
Well, boy, oh boy. We've sure spent 15 minutes talking about this stuff.
I found a new thing to watch.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Oh, yeah. It's tree Bridgerton. Cutting. It's tree cutting fails. So it's people trying to. And it's usually what's amazing. If you've never cut down a tree. Small trees, you can just pull out with a winch sometimes, like not a big deal, saw them down, cut out the stump, whatever, fine. Big trees, like the ones we have all over the Northwest, the ones that are like 4 stories tall, that's like a team of people in specialized tools. And there's a lot of videos online that are just compilations of like some dude and like one of his kids with a chainsaw they bought at the store and like mm-hmm. a ladder just trying to cut. And sometimes they die probably. Like it looks like a lot of the injuries look really grievous. People like being flung around the tree on a strap they were hanging from with a chainsaw. And
that's what they get for
chainsaw.
Trying to take down that
it's,
tree.
It's exactly. All of the videos are just like outrageous hubris. Like me, a guy who does not know much about cutting down trees, looks at these guys and is like, well, you shouldn't be doing this. You don't have the proper equipment or training to be taking down a tree of this size.
Oh. This is going to sound.
I'm watching them now. It's this, like, why
it's
are they,
amazing.
Like amidst power lines. Mm-hmm. And you're just like,
try that.
Don't do it. Don't do that.
There's also some incredible ones of like competent people who are just like, it's their job. And so they, like, there's this one amazing one where this guy cutting down a tree that's atop like some like power lines or something. And he's clearly like a professional arborist. He's got all the right kit. And because of some sort of error, his chainsaw catches on fire, which catches the tree below him on fire.
Oh, God.
And it's just like him. He deals with it. Like you just like watch
I'm
this guy.
I'm watching it now.
Yeah, it's amazing, right?
Oh, my God.
Isn't that
you
incredible?
You send it. Send it to me.
Isn't that an amazing video, Cody?
Oh, beautiful.
I look at big
shit.
Old trees.
Yeah, he is handling this.
He knows what he's doing. He's very, very capable.
Well, it's like he's at war with the tree. But I look at these big old trees and I just feel like we have no business trying to remove them. They were there before us and they'll be there after unless we cut them down.
I mean, I totally agree with you, which is why I don't feel bad when like a father of four very clearly gets permanently injured trying
like
to take
fuck
down
with the trees. Trees the fuck with you.
250-year-old elm tree in his backyard.
I've been watching Bridgerton and I doubt anybody's been watching that.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them are pretty bad.
Well, it's just like it goes fine and then just a chunk of the tree just like slams into them.
Yeah.
Or this one where
they're pretty great. I love watching these.
It's, you know, some of them are like it's not a person gets injured, it's that they're cutting on a tree and then it topples over onto their pool and the pool breaks and just like water goes everywhere.
Uh-huh.
This is great for an audio format.
Yeah,
we're
going
to take a quick break, I think.
Yeah,
it's time for that.
I think we have to.
For advertisements.
Break like the trees. Right?
Break like some trees and here's an ad.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I believe you.
What's up, folks?
Hey, should we talk about actual news?
And we're
I don't know what
up.
To talk about, but I will react vibrantly and with vivor.
Ooh.
Vim and vigor. Mm-hmm. What do you guys want to talk about?
Vim and vigor? So many things. I actually want to. So when we've got many things to talk about, if we would like to, we can talk about Elon Musk
or none.
And his adventures on Twitter.com, unions and Starbucks and Howard Schultz, his big announcement to save the unions.
We could talk about that IPCC report where they're like, we've got 3 years to avoid absolutely catastrophic climate change. But let's be like the rest of the world and not.
I just can't stand it. It's hard to talk about. I think about it all day. I think about it all the time. That report is horrifying. I tweeted about this. I truly had seen maybe three people talking about it on Twitter. I guess now we're talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, what do you like? I get everyone being like, why aren't people talking about this? But also, I guess because...
What are we supposed to say?
Nothing. We've said everything that can be said, which is that we're staring down the barrel of a nightmarish problem. None of the people in power are doing anything, and it is going to make the world less inhabitable and all of the already utterly devastating problems we are dealing with, including like violent authoritarianism and inequality,
and I mean,
even worse. And no one in power is going to do a goddamn thing about it, or is meaningfully doing a goddamn thing about it. I'm sorry, this is one of those things.
Yeah.
When we talk about like the failures of electoralism, people are always like, well, what about this? Or what about this? And it's like, no one is taking any meaningful action in the US government that is going to stop this.
I agree.
There are some people who are making some like attempts like to their credit, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez keep talking about like a thing that might do something, like the Green New Deal has a chance to make some meaningful impacts on this, but it doesn't have a chance to pass, which is not, you know, attacking her for trying, but no one else is. It's not going to happen.
I know. And that's what's so frustrating. Like, well, the point of what I was saying, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. My tweet is basically, it's like they're saying we have 3 years to turn this ship around. Otherwise, we will not avert the worst case disaster. And not many people are talking about it. And I'm not criticizing people because I get it. Because what are we supposed to say when I'm like, this isn't good. We are all carrying this anxiety, this watching this train plowing into the depot and not slowing down. Meanwhile, okay, we should probably talk about Ukraine. What's happening?
Well, right, there's like, well, we're the like world headed there, shortage. And then there's also like all these trains heading towards
well,
the
but
same
like
spot.
Specifically, yeah. When we're talking about climate change and the effects of climate change on crops, well, right now, Ukraine and Russia, they are a huge exporter of grain, especially for the Middle East and to other places that are already suffering from famine. To the Middle East, to Yemen. And so what we're dealing with right now is there's a lack of supplies leaving. The current harvest may or may not be harvested and how that affects next season's harvest. Not to mention, okay, well, just the infrastructure being destroyed there, long-term sanctions that we have and how that's going to affect. So, sorry, I'm just going off on a tangent here, but it's all connected when we're seeing this happen and we're like, okay, we've got 3 fucking years. Now's the time. We put off talking about the news for 20 minutes and here we are.
You know, like the most reasonable thing in the world right now is to put off talking about the news. There's a lot we need to figure out as a species, and none of it is going to be figured out through people yelling at other people on Twitter for not tweeting about the IPCC report. Sure. So number one, calm down. Like, don't calm down about climate change because it's absolutely as serious a problem as the report presents it. But like, calm down about the fact that people like joking, that people prefer to like joke about whatever bullshit is happening with Amy Schumer than they do to talk about the doom that like we people like. Folks are like, what am I supposed to do? And the answer is like, nobody knows, because it's particularly like a lot of folks on the far left will be like, well, people should be attacking fossil fuel infrastructure. And I think that would be rad. But what would actually happen is that like one person would carry out an attack that would not actually do any material damage to fossil fuel infrastructure. And then their life and the lives of all their friends would be destroyed. So that's not going to fix the problem either. And voting sure as shit has not yet done anything to fix the problem. So like people are going to laugh about a thing that's funny that happened online because they feel as if they have no agency to deal with this problem. And so far, no one has I don't know what they're supposed to do other than the kind of stuff we talk about on It Could Happen Here, where community resiliency, trying to prepare the people around you, the people that you live with and yourself and the people that are in your community for the consequences of climate change. That is actionable. That is a thing you can do something about.
Right, yeah.
But you as an individual, or we as a bunch of people on Twitter who are vaguely left-wing, are not going to destroy the global fossil fuel system.
I think if you have
a theory for how, let me know.
Well, I don't have a theory for how. And all of your points are, I think they're all really important and well taken, because I think that if we are to move, this is the new reality. This isn't changing. This is our reality. It's only going to get worse.
You ever seen a movie called First Reformed, Robert? Sorry.
I think it's really important for us to have outlets and to maintain our mental health and to be realistic about what we can and can't do. And yes, bond together and prepare for yourself, you know, and your community. I also think it's important for us to talk about it. I think it's important to keep it. But I just mean in general. I think the point is well taken. Like, take a breath and focus on the things that you can control. But I do think it's important for us to acknowledge what's happening and continue to talk about it, because that's truly the unfortunate only way that it moves a needle in terms of electoral
and
politics.
And be aware of who like can't actually do things who and aren't.
Right. It's not that I'm blaming people. I think that I get it, and I didn't want to talk about it or tweet about it, because I'd rather focus on the things that are right here in front of me that I can control, that bring me happiness, because this brings me dread. But what brings
horrible.
Me even more dread personally is feeling that no one else is seeing what's happening, you know, or that we're allowing politicians to take a pass we need them to listen to us. I don't know what that looks like. We certainly didn't sustain mass protests during Black Lives Matter, you know, and people were dying in front of us.
I mean, they kept going
it was
for a
like
while.
Extremely,
but
it was like,
they did.
The,
but
one of
they
the
did.
Problems is that, like, the same people who are fighting viciously to stop any kind of positive movement on climate change, and the same people who are fighting to turn back the tide of gay rights to the point where now there's popular discussion about, like, whether or not we should reverse course on the existence of gay marriage, are the same people who are, like, advocating vociferously to fund and remove any chance of accountability for the cops as they beat and murder people. Whereas, sure. It, like, if you were out in the street protesting the cops, that's kind of all you were able to do. And if you're trying to force positive change on climate change, that's kind of a full-time gig. And, like,
sure.
It's very frustrating because it's really easy to be a civilizational arsonist. All you have to do is get on TV and yell at whatever will make conservatives angry, or mm-hmm. get on TV if you're a liberal and talk about how any of the suggestions for how to make change aren't realistic and we need to move forward with fossil fuel companies to find a solution together mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
it's called synergy.
In either case, it's way easier to just kind of punt the problem than it is to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to deal with the problem of creeping authoritarianism, which is tied into climate change, but it's also kind of a full-time job to keep track of, like, what militia leaders are hanging out with what Republican congressional candidates mm-hmm. or actual congressmen. And it's kind of a full-time gig to, again, attempt to force movement on climate change. And all of these issues, these problems are so complicated that, like, if you're trying to, this is a problem we run into on It Could Happen Here that I still feel mixed about. Like, we have multiple members of full-time staff, and I still don't feel like we're giving good full-time coverage to each of those things because they're so complicated. And the question even of, like, how realistic, what can be done about climate change at this point, what changes can be made, is really complicated. And you'll find experts who disagree. There are people who are ecological experts that say any window is already closed and, like, we're effectively fucked. And there's experts that say, no, that's crazy. And there's a whole bunch of things that can be done. We could start doing them today. And even just trying to parse out that single debate is a lot. There's a lot happening.
There's a lot happening. But also, like, you don't know, okay, what are the unintended ramifications of a potential solution? How does it impact X community? How does it do the, you know, jellyfish, if you will, for those of us who watch Patriot?
That's right.
Oh, go on.
Cody.
So, I don't know. Cody, this is your shoddy. I just wanted to say shoddy again.
I know you did.
I always thought that was one of the cuter things y'all developed for your shoddy.
It's almost
Cody.
The official name.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
Cody, you remember that fun time back when we were both young and you made that video about an app called Chat Roulette where people were exposed to penises?
That's how Cody and I met.
That is true.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. She's in it.
Oh.
Yeah,
I was still living in Ohio and I needed...
Met. Yeah. But, like, they were emailing first video for Cracked. And then O'Brien, I believe, was like, he introduced us to so that I could make a video, a little clip for his Chat Roulette video.
That's when I became acquainted with, because it was like I was working as I just moved on from intern to, like, part time employee. And Dan sent me this video and was like, this guy Cody, I think, is going to be a big part of the site moving forward.
does that video still exist? Should you tell people the...
Honestly,
concept
probably not. Because,
many of the things we created.
Would we be canceled?
Yeah. I don't know.
Cody
the cracked player is broken, so I don't even think it's still available anymore. Yeah. It's just about how if you go on Chat Roulette, you're bound to see people's dicks constantly.
Much like the show Patriot, Chat Roulette was an app where you were randomly matched with another person around the world. You had no way of knowing who that
would be. Oh, it's still here.
And the basic idea behind Chat Roulette was, wouldn't it be neat if you could just get connected to someone else in the world and then maybe that would spawn interesting conversations? And what actually happened is that 50% of the people on Chat Roulette would immediately show their penis to the other 50%. That was how the site worked.
That's and what happened.
In retrospect, there were a lot of lessons about what the internet was going to be in the future from Chat Roulette. In retrospect, everything still works the same way. It's just
it's playing. Yeah,
it was pretty good. It was pretty good video, Cody.
Thanks.
How do I play this for everybody?
Anyway,
how do I play this for you guys?
Share screen.
I know the world wasn't actually simpler back then. Obviously, the invasion of Iraq was still fairly fresh at that point, just really 4 or 5 years old. A couple of different horrible wars were raging. A lot of the building, the Tea Party, was kind of like in its offing. A lot of the
I'm
going to
play this song for you guys.
Social trends that would be disasters were people were ignoring climate change and mocking Al Gore for making a very mild movie warning people about it. And in retrospect, all of the problems that are now catastrophes were just building in that period. But everything felt simple because we were young and dumb and able to just focus on how funny Chat Roulette was.
Silly videos about whatever.
Yeah.
Make a little tune. We don't need to listen to this 3-minute song.
I don't know what I've done.
But let's put it on at the end for the people who remember that Chat Roulette was ever a thing.
God, I know. It's like, pre-Omegle.
Definitely pre-Omegle. Way pre-Omegle.
Yeah.
By like close to a decade, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes. Because Omegle's still around.
Yeah,
I really
Omegle's
don't
like
think Chat Roulette is.
Absolutely not. I refuse to accept that it might still be alive. Although every now and then I'm reminded that Digg still exists, and I'm just livid.
No,
not that
doesn't.
I had any issue
you're
with
lying.
Digg, but it's,
whatever,
it shouldn't
whatever
still
website
be around.
You think you're seeing it's not Digg? No way.
Ah, yeah, baby.
So what was even happening? Speaking of Chat Roulette. We'll be right back, unlike Chat Roulette, which disappeared and
which
didn't
disappeared.
Come back.
But you know what? It lives on whenever you accidentally show your producer and her mom a bunch of dudes' penises from the show Patriot.
That's
because
right.
You fell asleep.
The spirit
at an
lives
opportune
on.
Time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Way to bring it back.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless. From the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic, I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
Oh, we're
talking
so bad.
About good times, bad times, the fact that... What are we going to do here about this... About this climate stuff, because it feels like an intractable kind of problem alongside the people fighting vigorously, doing stuff like there's effectively a full abortion ban just got passed in Oklahoma. You are increasingly seeing conservatives rally around the idea of criminalizing any contact between trans people or gay people and like kids, particularly starting in schools and with the banning of books. You're got this horrible war unfolding in Ukraine with an act of probable genocide in the suburb of Bucha. You've got the
wars everywhere.
Authoritarian realignment with authoritarians on absolutely on both sides of this growing kind of international block of conflicting nations. Yeah, some shit's not great with the climate. The Arctic was 70 degrees hotter than it's ever been at this time of year, which also is bad.
How many degrees?
70.
That's a lot of degrees.
Yeah, it's a real problem, Katie. It shouldn't be that much hotter than it normally is or has ever been before.
That sounds
good. So, like, you recycle? Is that going to do it?
Recycle?
We're going to get, we're going to knock it out. We're
compost.
Get it.
Don't forget compost. To compost. Plant a tree.
Compost Republican legislators. That actually would make some progress. That might help.
Stop cutting down trees. Stop deforestation.
Start cutting down Republican. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk is about to help run Twitter, so that's gonna be good.
You know, we can do actually. I think, and I think it's President Biden is doing a really good job with this.
Joseph Robinette Biden.
Well, he just announced today. I'll just read his tweet verbatim.
Oh, good.
I love verbatim. I love verbating.
Yeah. So I'm going to verbate right now.
I verbate him.
In front of everybody.
You verbate her.
I verbatim.
We're all verbatim.
I verbatim. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I verbate. That was a good one. Bait. I vermectibate. Bectimating? I don't know. I don't know what I was trying to go for there.
COVID. I just signed an executive order that directs federal agencies to continue doing everything in their power to expand the quality and affordability of health coverage.
Knocked it out of the park. Good work, Joe. So does that do it? What's that going to... Is that going to...
It's going to
help
direct them to continue to do everything in their power to expand the quality and affordability of health coverage.
That's good. So healthcare's gotten cheaper over the last few years, right?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, that's what
I
heard.
They're gonna continue to do that. They're gonna. So he signed an executive order, to stay the course, I guess. Right. To keep it.
I can't.
Health spending in the U.S. increased by 4.6% in 2019.
What'd you say?
Okay. Nope. Healthcare. It's
still bad.
I mean, it's increasing at the rate it's been increasing at.
I thought it was going down.
So that's good. It's not increasing on an unusual basis, although the latest numbers I've got here are from 2019. So they did just.
Who's to say pre-pandemic? Yeah.
There's that insulin copay cap that just got pushed.
That
That's
is
good.
True. That is true and good. That is true.
Yeah,
I just think
it is copays, which is
right. Well, exactly. Everything always comes down to like blah blah blah. If you got insurance.
Yeah, like it's one of those things. There's an article I found on it that describes it as like a path to affordability, which again, I'm not to shit. Like, obviously when it comes to things that like legislators are doing, this is one of those things where I'm like, okay, so there are some people who are making material like this will have an impact on some people that is positive.
Yes.
And that's good. I'm not going to shit on it, but it is also worth noting, like, these are copay caps. This is not stopping the broader fundamental problem, which is that insulin, which should be effectively free because of how cheap it is to produce, is instead expensive enough that people are dying because they cannot afford it. And that's a fundamental problem with how we view healthcare and how we view like the way capitalism should work. On a moral level, it's a problem with like the amount of suffering that we are happy to allow to happen for modest profitability.
Yeah, how much can we tolerate?
Yeah, which again, I'm not, again, not shitting on the legislators who fought. This was like a real slug match. But that's part of what, as good as it is that like they made some progress on making insulin more affordable, the fact that it was or is still, because it hasn't passed the Senate yet, like it was a fucking battle in the House. And now we're going to see if it can pass the Senate. The fact that like that's the level of fight that we're getting, or like the level of fight we're getting to confirm the current Supreme Court justice, whose name I've spaced on.
Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Like we're talking about the like when you look at what a level of fight these things are, which are both I think worth doing within the context of the system we have. Capping insulin copays worth doing. Based on what I can tell of this justice's record, seems like it will be a positive having her on the Supreme Court. Not saying these are not worth doing, but when you look at the degree to which both of these things, which are in the broad scheme of the problems facing us on a global scale, pretty minor, right? Yeah. When you look at what a fight that is, it makes me feel like, okay, well, how are we going to, for example, dramatically and very quickly put an end to carbon emissions? Well, we're not.
Right.
We're just not going to do that.
It's going to take people having their lives destroyed to, like, literally destroyed. And meanwhile, we're looking at housing prices everywhere, and it's not affordable to live. And if you're living in the mountains, you have to pay $12,000 a year for fire insurance.
Well, and like, and if you, as people's lives are destroyed by climate change, their ability to agitate for action on climate change will be hampered by the fact that they are homeless or in severe desperation. And we are also in the process of criminalizing houselessness to an increasing extent. And like where I live in Portland, which has been seeing a surge in houselessness, the liberal local government is now pushing the idea of forcing people into camps run by the National Guard, which you're going to see more of all over the place. Yeah, like the solutions to this are not going to come for voting for people. The solutions to this are only going to come by massive collective action, and that's a titanic struggle. I don't think it's something that will be accomplished in 3 years, if it ever is, because now that said, I didn't think the shit that happened in 2020 was going to happen. But also, we have to look at the reactions, like the results of 2020, which was, in the best case scenarios, some cities had reforms and mild parts of their justice system or their policing system, and most places did nothing, and now a lot of that is getting pushed back. So,
yeah, it's being
That's kind of what I mean with big protest anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah, we're going to need to some stuff's going to need to get damaged in a very in a scale and to a degree of I don't think it's I think organizing is a necessary part of the solution. I don't think that voting is gonna solve these big problems, which is not to say that, like, you know, to the extent that it allows you to do things like cap insulin copays, if that happens, that's good. And I'm not one of those folks on the left who's gonna say, like, don't bother voting, because there's things it can help with, but it's like I'm not going to say that band-aids aren't useful, but if you're bleeding out from a cut in your femoral artery, a band-aid isn't going to solve the problem.
Yeah, it's just we're like, it's beneficial to keep putting like filling the bucket with water and tossing that water overboard, but that's not going to do it. But like, if you can take 30 minutes out of your day to be like, yeah, let's get more of those buckets out of here.
Yeah.
But acknowledging that that's not actually going to save the sinking ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the agencies are going to continue to do what they were doing, right?
Yeah,
everything in their power. It's midterm season. Like we're getting there. So like even now, I'm seeing like a few Congress people start to be like, by the way, we should have Medicare for All, right?
Yep, it's that time of year.
You know, like everyone,
where they
like,
trot out the slogans. It's hard because you're right. Just both of them, all politicians suck. These people aren't in there for the right reasons, or the people that are can't do anything because most of them are run by corporations, blah, blah, blah. But our window of opportunity is fast sinking. Like, we know, we see that this they couldn't get shit done.
They
and there's a big disillusionment. Like, what's the point? And now Republicans are, I mean, that's what it feels like for people. Yeah. They're all the same. I don't say that there isn't a point. I'm saying that that's the sentiment and that's what it feels like. And that's why we're going to lose in a few months.
I mean, we'll see what happens with that shit. We'll see what happens with that.
That's such a dark way of saying it. I shouldn't just be so down.
There's a lot of mobilization on the right for a lot of these like culture war issues and things like that. But I do have some sort of hope and, like there are a lot of people I think on the right now who are slowly realizing the things that we've been sort of pointing out, like, especially with like the rampant homophobia that has been amped up recently. Yeah. I have seen people be like, wait, I thought we were talking about this. Why are we being like, you're being like openly homophobic and like vitriolic now. And I think that some people are sort of realizing like, oh, this was always the move here.
I do think that that sooner or later things will be bad. If we're talking about climate anyway, or healthcare or gas prices, there will hopefully be a point where some of this division, where we realize that we need each other. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, where you start like saying, falling down the pitfalls of like of ways things have been distorted, where you see the common ground, like, if we need each other to save this country from extinction.
That has to go along with the corollary that a not insignificant chunk of this country would happily kill the entire world in order to avoid admitting that they have been wrong about some important things.
Mm-hmm. And that's
they are willing to burn the country and planet down in order to ensure that they never have to reevaluate the things that they have been, that they believe.
I'm hopeful that there are fewer of those people then.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be fun. My feeling is that the Democratic Party has not done a great job of anticipating the things that are going to help them in the midterms.
Oh, no.
what makes you say that?
But it's also like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here. A lot of folks are saying that the polling looks like shit did in 2010 when the Tea Party had a real blowout win. Mm-hmm.
It could very well be a complete disaster.
It could be a real, real cock up.
Yeah, I mean, there could, you know, get some more Taylor Greens up in there keep fucking the cruises in there for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is still early. And I do think that the sort of end game that, like, with like the dog whistling and the sort of like the rhetorical games that have been played about all these sort of issues, Mask is like by design, like being broadcast, and I think some people really preferred the mask being on.
I think we're gonna, because some of the polling I'm seeing suggests that like things are heading in the Republicans' directions for the midterms, but not to an extent that's out of line with what tends to happen in the midterms after a presidential election for the opposition party. And if that's the case, that could actually be kind of bad news, because if they, you know, take back one of the houses or one of the chambers of Congress, but they don't. It's not really a blowout. It's just kind of a normal, like, they're showing like a 2% lead overall, something like that, which is pretty in line. If that's accurate, if kind of the Republican support is not being underestimated, which is always possible. then that would be interesting. That might look really bad for them actually in 2024, because that would show that like they actually have absolutely hit their cap, that going so extreme right. has hurt them, that like
it doesn't create the red wave that they always talk about. Like what
kind of the thing that we're looking to see, is this going to be a pretty normal thing for a midterm after an election, where the party that won the big election is tired because, you know, the kind of campaign promises have intersected with reality. People are less motivated. They don't get their base out, but the party in opposition is all riled up because they're the party in opposition and they've lost control of the presidency. And so they make some gains. If that's what we get out of the midterm, as opposed to like a 2010 Tea Party blowout, then that might suggest they have some real problems when 2024 comes along, because that might suggest, oh, you guys have peaked what this rhetoric can get you. And when it's a presidential election and there's more activation of the base, of course, that also assumes that like the hope would be, the best case scenario then would be that like Republicans have a win that's in line with what tends to happen in midterms after an election. That's not exceptional or crazy big. But it spooks Democrats in power enough that they actually start doing some more of the things that are going to pick up actual support with their, mm-hmm. with the left and with progressives and stuff. And, you know, if that proves to be a wise electoral, yeah, I don't have a ton of confidence with that.
Well, it's just like the thing, like the one thing that like Democrats can't get enough of, like more than losing, is like not learning lessons.
Yes.
They just gobble up not learning very obvious lessons. So yeah. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. But. I guess we'll see some shit. I guess we'll see some shit. Like I have no idea how to tell what's going to happen other than that like it's probably going to overall be a win for Republicans. But the question is like how big a deal is it going to be? Right.
Long term, or how it'll affect us going mm-hmm. forward. And,
yeah.
But again,
I mean, yeah, it's going to be
3-year window here, babies. Like, that shit doesn't seem possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could just be like, because I don't know, like Sarah Palin's going to run again, right?
Yes, or, she is.
Well,
it started out as a yuck, and then I think the follow-up, cool. like a few days later, was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. But like that's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, I just don't think that that is going to fly. This new wave.
We'll see. There's some reasons for like there's some dire shit happening, including the fact that like according to Gallup, at the end of 2021, Democrats led Republicans in party identification by 9 points. In the beginning of it, by the end of the year, Republicans were ahead by 5, which is like the biggest swing Gallup has ever recorded in that. So that's bad. But also,
what do you mean by party identification? Of people identifying as Democrat,
people identifying to Gallup in a poll as Democrat versus Republican, right? And I found a good. I don't know how. I'm not an expert on any of this, but I found an analysis that's pointing out that like there's a couple of reasons to maybe think that it will not go quite as well for the Republicans as some people are suggesting. One of them is just the fact that like. In the 2020 election, House Democrats lost a bunch of seats to Republicans that were the most vulnerable seats, which mm-hmm. means that, like, of the seats currently being battled, Democrats aren't defending nearly as many seats in vulnerable districts, whereas House Republicans actually have a lot of seats in districts where things are more split that they have to defend. Redistricting has gone reasonably well for Democrats compared to, like, what people were worried about. And you know, in the Senate, they're not defending a whole lot of seats that are particularly vulnerable compared to what they were. So it's possible. And it's one of those things, if this actually is kind of like a slug match and it's kind of hard to tell at the end of it, who's come out on top, that's a disaster for Republicans. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. Again, like we've been talking about, there's so much that's like catastrophic these days that I'm just like trying not to. It doesn't seem like obsessing over the midterms is any better than obsessing over anything else. We're in pretty, like, if the midterms go great, I'm still not convinced that the primary catastrophic problems facing us as a civilization will get fixed.
Oh, right. Certainly not.
Like, if the midterms go real good for the Democrats, it certainly means that it's less likely things will be catastrophic for all of us here on planet Earth, but not necessarily by enough to really matter for most people. Because, I mean, what will matter is, you know, the concept of the end of democracy, but also if we do not take massive action on climate change, democracy will not survive the coming decades of refugee influxes and natural disasters, as we've seen in a number of parts of the world already, which is why the percentage of human beings living in authoritarian regimes has, like, shot up by something like 30 or 40% in the last decade and change. Like, we're watching the dissolution of democracy on a global scale in favor of authoritarianism. And there's positive signs in that. Generally speaking, the fact that Ukraine has done so much better than Russia in this war is potentially very significant, because there's a number of serious issues with the Ukrainian government, as there's with any government, but it is a democracy. It is a functioning democracy with a rule of law, which is why, like, the former president Poroshenko lost his election to Zelensky and had to flee the country because
Ukraine is a functioning democracy.
Ukraine is Russia is not a democracy.
I thought you were saying Russia. I was like,
Ukraine definitely knows more about it than me, but I want to push that. And part of why they've been doing so well, I mean, they've routed, it was not a retreat around Kiev. The level of documented Russian armored losses outside of Kiev alone is not a retreat. It's a rout. It was a disaster militarily. And, you know, we'll see what actually happens in the east now that both sides are able to kind of redeploy some forces. I think that might benefit Ukraine more than it does Russia, because the Russian forces that pulled away from Kiev suffered titanic losses, whereas the Ukrainian military seems to still be in pretty good order. But part of why you're seeing Ukraine outperform Russia so much, obviously there's the factor of, like, Western weapons, but Western weapons, as we have seen in a number of conflicts so far, are only useful insofar as you have functional battle doctrine and functional military leadership in order to enable functional resistance.
We've been training them, haven't we?
There's an extent. Yeah, that has not been a non-factor. The U.S. and NATO.
We've been training them for years.
I think that is less. We have been. I think that is less of a factor than the fact that Ukrainians developed through 8 years of experience fighting a peer force.
Yep. Yes.
Really significant and autochthonic. You know, having arisen from within the society, battle doctrine.
I do agree
that had not really had not been tested before. I think. So that's, I think, a major factor in what we're seeing.
And motherfuckers.
Yeah. And that doesn't, you know, that'll only get you so far. It's better to be smart than it is to be tough. And what the Ukrainian military did after 2014 was accept, number one, the reality of their situation, which is they had just gotten fucking pantsed by the Russian army. Some disastrous armored losses on behalf of the Ukrainian military that look like the shit you're seeing the Russians suffer right now. And it was because Ukraine was a tremendously corrupt country with all of these oligarchs who had terrible influence within not just the civil society, but within the military. You had very corrupt military leadership. You had very, like, a lot of, you know, military units whose parts had been sold off wholesale that weren't actually ready to fight. And Ukrainians, after kind of fighting to retain a democracy in 2013, 2014, voted in a series of people who, for all of their flaws, made some major reforms to the way the military functions and who commanded it that were extremely effective. And so, I don't know. I'm really trying not to be too much of a doomer. There are signs that, like, it's not an insurmountable fight. Because one of the good things about authoritarians is that they're bad at a lot of stuff. They're really good at fucking up a bunch of different things at the same time in a way that makes it hard to deal with, because you have to be a lot more competent to fix the things they're fucking up, right?
Yeah.
But they also, when you're able to engage them kind of directly, when you can stop sort of futzing around the edges of the fight and throw down with them face to face, they're not often nearly as competent in a straight up fight as they are in kind of this sort of insurgent arson cultural shit that they are very good at. And so I think that's kind of the struggle for the left and for the center in the coming years, is to force these guys with like climate change, is to force them to stare the reality of it in the face and then hit them in the face repeatedly. Like not battle around the edges of this shit, but actually organize and get together to an extent that they're forced to deal with this face to face. And there are like signs for optimism there. One of the things that this is not specifically climate change related, but it speaks to the potential of organization to solve these problems, is like when Trump was like threatening, you know, we had that budget shutdown and shit of the government, the longest one in history. It got put down because like the airline stewardesses union was like, well, we'll do a strike. We'll go on strike. And then you can't have planes. And like, what are you going to fucking do then? And they caved immediately. And if you actually do get, you know, that was one small example, but it points to the potential of like, if you actually can get enough people, and most people are broadly in support of things like not having the climate collapse, if you can actually manage to weld folks together long enough to take some of these issues on head on, right-wing resistance tends to not be able to actually deal with it. They're best when everybody's distracted and unfocused and dealing with a million things, which is why they try to fuck up a million things at once, right? That's the genius in their tactic, because if they can fuck up enough things at once that everybody's focusing on a bunch of separate stuff, it's really hard to kind of get them to grips and actually get them locked into a fucking fist fight. If you can get them locked into a fist fight, they're probably going to lose the fist fight. It's just a matter of actually forcing that fight before they are able to crumble everything around you and you have nowhere to stand. Does that make sense? That's where my thoughts are.
Very well said.
Yeah. Anyway, that's probably a podcast, right?
It certainly felt like a podcast.
I think it has to be. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that in response to increased unionization, Howard Schultz says he's going to try to win people back by doing Starbucks NFTs.
Yes!
You could have saved it for Thursday.
we can talk about it at length on Thursday, but I feel like I'm waiting to say it out loud.
Have you found more info on like what they're actually trying to do? Because I am desperate to learn what the real plan is.
I don't know
what
the specifics are. It's just that speech he gave. But just Starbucks NFTs. So don't unionize.
Can't wait. Because there will be
Starbucks NFTs, folks.
For all the good boys and girls, you do not. All right. That's it for us. We podcasted. We did it. We went on a journey. Thank you to Robert only for watching Patriot. Cody, you're no longer my friend.
You are Thank welcome. You. That is extreme.
You're right. That's too far. It's too far.
Conversation with HR that I now have to have. Thanks to my experience with the show Patriot.
How about the guy who plays the HR manager on Patriot?
Oh, he's so good. Oh, my God. The episode in season two where they're all out drinking. Very funny.
Unreal.
Really Unreal. Quite an ensemble show. I enjoy it a lot.
Well, disgusted. We're going to sell a Patriot watch-along
podcast.
I'm disgusted
by this camaraderie I'm seeing.
Yeah, enjoy the show Patriot, which ended like 3 years ago.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back next week. Bye.
It's true. Bye.
Everything's so dumb, and it's going to get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.